You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back. Good morning. Happy Friday. We made it to the weekend, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin. Do you like documentary films? Well, you're in luck, because this weekend, the 2025 Dialogues Documentary Film Festival is happening in Milwaukee. And Don Rosen sat down with Robin Ehrlich from Milwaukee Film to talk about the inception and all of the films being shown over the next few days.
And Robin Ehrlich is joining me right now. She is the Communications and Public Relations Coordinator for Milwaukee Film. And they're all excited getting ready for the Dialogues Documentary Film Festival. It runs the 18th of September through the 21st for 4 days. More than 30 documentary films will be screened with Q&A. Some have Q&As after the movie's over. And good morning, Robin. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
My wife and I love documentaries. We love watching them because you're watching a true story. You know, if they're told correctly, you're watching a true story. And documentary, they're documenting the story. And I love it. And who came up with the idea of a documentary film festival?
Yeah, I think the idea came from our artistic director, Kara Ogburn. She has been with Milwaukee Film for over a decade, and she noticed over many years of programming for our spring festival, which is our 15-day Milwaukee Film Festival, that our audience is super hungry for documentary films. There's always a very engaged audience for documentaries, and I think it's partially because you don't get to see them in theaters as often as you once would have. I think the theatrical setting for documentaries is a little bit more rare nowadays. So I think just getting to have that communal experience with documentaries is something that's like a little bit special. And once we realized that, you know, Wisconsin is hungry for more documentary films and the chance to talk about them, that's kind of how Dialogues was born, which is the name of the festival, because we want to have our audiences watch these films and then kind of spark conversations afterwards.
Robin, when I said whose idea was it, you were supposed to say, oh, that was my idea.
It was all me.
That's what they give credit to anybody else. You're supposed to take it all yourself. You're the one on the radio. They're not there on the radio. To give us some idea, give us some of the titles and what they're about.
Yeah. Yes, we have over 30 films at this year's Dialogues Documentary Festival, and they span a wide range of topics from everything from, you know, like healthcare, the healthcare industry, social justice. There's a film called Cat Town USA, which is about a retirement home for cats, for senior cats, for anyone who's into the, you know, learning about more cat stuff. There is, films about deep sea exploration. There's a documentary called How Deep Is Your Love? And it goes into the mysterious deep sea. There's a film called It's Dorothy, which is a kind of in-depth exploration of the character Dorothy Gale, who we know from The Wizard of Oz, from going from the original Frank L. Baum original books to The Wiz and now Wicked. So, and that one's going to be really fun because we're going to have the director of the film as well as a local Oz historian, Ryan Jay, who's going to do a panel discussion afterwards.
And you know what? These filmmakers put years into making these movies. These aren't just done, well, we'll make a movie, it'll be ready in 2 weeks. It takes years to put this because you got to get the facts together, the archival footage, and you've got to make a coherent story out of it because it has to be entertaining as well as interesting. And they put a lot of work, and you should see some of these. They're really good. There are documentaries on TV all the time, and when you watch the Academy Awards, when they do the documentary category, make note of the five, they usually have five documentaries up there. even though they don't, the ones that don't win, they're still great movies or they wouldn't have been nominated. And some of them are from all over the world and they really are good. My wife and I love watching documentaries because they're true stories.
They're great. It's really special to see something, you know, a nonfiction, the power of nonfiction filmmaking. And I love fiction, but I think there is something really special about seeing a real true, someone's real true story unfold on screen like that.
And when you watch channels, these true crime channels, now some of them show documentaries like on the mob, the history of, you know, the mob in New York or the mob in Italy. And they do these truths, and these are documentaries. I mean, I don't know, people say, it's a documentary, it's boring. Oh, no. No. If it's done right, it could be fascinating because, you know, it's true. All right, so.
Yeah, thrilling. There's a true crime documentary that we're showing actually at this year's lineup that I'm super excited about. It's called Stolen Kingdom. It uncovers the history of mischief, scandal, and crime at Walt Disney World.
Oh, my goodness.
And I know. And it culminates to the mysterious disappearance of a beloved animatronic at Disney World named Buzzy that's valued at $500,000. So the whole film kind of tries to solve the mystery of who stole Buzzy.
If you'd like to attend this event, go to mkefilm.org for tickets and information. If you'd like to listen to the entire interview, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for The Don Rosen Show and download that episode directly to your device and listen to it anytime, anywhere. That's civicmedia.us/shows. And while you're at the website, you can sign up for our brand new newsletter being sent out daily. It's absolutely free and takes the best parts of all of our shows and the stories coming out of Civic Media from all over Wisconsin and puts them in one handy dandy email. Again, go to civicmedia.us for more information. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. To stay up to date with everything going on in southeastern Wisconsin, go to waukradio.com and sign up for our newsletter. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 6:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. Our very own Earl Ingram has a brand new show called What's Going On. This podcast is a long-form conversation program where he has discussions with leaders in and outside of the Milwaukee area and how they impact the community. And today you're going to hear a selection from a discussion that Earl had with a gentleman named Isaac. And Isaac discusses his experience in the foster system and how it brought him to a group called WellPoint.
Well, first off, I'm 22 years old. I aged out the foster system at the age of 21. So it's only been a year since I've, you know, been handling things on my own for the most part, at least when it comes down to the foster system stuff. I also have sickle cell trait or sickle cell at that. I have a unique health condition, genetic disorder.
Tell us a little bit how you got involved in the foster care system and how long you were in it.
Well, I entered foster system around the age of 11 and 12, and I've been in the foster system since. It kind of started off with me going to residential treatment places and stuff like that. I didn't necessarily get into my first foster home until I was like 16, or first group home, whatever the case may be. But I was in the residential treatment place for all those years in Racine until they managed to find me a family, because When it comes down to the foster system, not many parents want older kids, and I was one of the older kids, so it was kind of hard for me to necessarily find a home. So that's kind of how it all started. It's kind of started off for me at a young age.
So you have siblings? You have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I do have brothers and sisters. I talked to quite a few of them right now and stuff like that. I reconnected with a couple of them. I'm reconnected with my older brother. I'm reconnected with my older sister. And another one of my older sisters, but she's in Chicago. But majority of us, out of all of us, we're in Milwaukee for the most part.
So you know your father? Is your father in your life?
I never really knew his name. I never really knew him, but I knew he was a good man. From what I witnessed and what I have as a memory of him as a child is that, you know, he would come home every day and play with me and stuff like that. I never really knew his name, but I knew he resembled my older brother a lot. Like, I see, whenever I look at my older brother, I see my father and my older brother because he looks just like him.
What about your mother?
My mother, I know my mom. She did her best she could to take care of me and everything too, you know. She, as of now, she's in a nursing home, you know, because throughout the time of me being in the foster system and stuff like that, she ended up having a stroke and she ended up becoming paralyzed. So as of now, she's in a nursing home and stuff like that. They're taking real good care of her and stuff like that. And I think she's like 50. Yeah, like 50 something, at least 51 now. It's been another year, extra year. So
where'd you go to high school?
I went to high school. Well, first, my first high school I went to was Nathan Hale High School. No, not Nathan Hale. Vincent High School. I went to Vincent High School. Then I transferred from Vincent High School to Nathan Hale. But that was kind of like after when I was pretty much going into my sophomore year. I wasn't doing good in school. I wasn't. But I can say I definitely at least tried to go to class, you know. I was going through so much at the moment that I necessarily felt like that I ain't want to help myself. You know what I'm saying? I ain't felt the teachers didn't want to help me and stuff like that. So I'm like, why would I want to help myself? Why would I get the motivation to help myself if the teachers aren't helping? So.
Well, were you considered a troubled kid?
No, not at all. That's one thing you can definitely say. A lot of staff there at the school and teachers and everything knew I was a good kid. They knew I didn't cause problems. I didn't cause any problem. And mind you, at that school, I've only gotten to, so far at that school, I've only gotten to one fight. I've only got suspended one time ever, you know, at that school throughout my whole course of time of being there. So I never really was a troublemaker. I was more of more so one of the quiet kids because I was going through a lot and stuff like that. But I had people that necessarily stuck up for me and stuff like that. People, you know, that were cool with me and stuff like that. And they seen what I was, not even gonna say they seen what I was going through, but they knew what I was going through because I explained it, you know. Many people and teachers didn't think it was real until I said something about it.
So did you drop out at any given time?
No, I didn't drop out at any given time. So after I transferred to Nathan Hale High School, pretty much I was at that school for at least... I was at the school for at least a good while, you know. I'd never dropped out, but I started having some complications with my health stuff, and it kind of all started when COVID broke out. So I kind of was set back because of that, and then, you know, I recovered, and then school year was dang near almost over, and mind you, nobody was going to school in person and stuff like that, so we're kind of doing everything online, and everything kind of went on from there. So then we pretty much made a plan for me necessarily to see if I could try to graduate on time or if it was time for me to do classes to get my GED and stuff like that.
So how is that going now? How many credits are you away?
I know I'm like, I think I only got like one or two credits. I was like, yeah, I wasn't doing my part a lot in school because I was going through a lot. Even when I went to Nathan Hale, you know what I'm saying? Like, I was more compliant with going to class a lot then because when I was going to Vincent, I was skipping a lot, you know, and stuff like that. But if somebody, you know, for the most part, I was in class, you know, and even if I did go to class, I wasn't doing my work, but that's only because I ain't understand it. And I ain't feel like I was getting the help I needed, so I ain't want to help myself. And it was just...
So you were in a home.
Yeah, I was in a group home.
Home. Mm-hmm. While you were at Nathan Hale and also at Vincent. Mm-hmm. And so going through all those different challenges, we can't tell your whole story now because we're going to talk about it some more. Mm-hmm. But what I noticed about you is you're a very personable young man who certainly can communicate very well, which is a good sign when you're talking about being successful.
If you'd like to find out more about WellPoint, you can go to wellpointcare.org. And if you'd like to listen to that entire episode, go to civicmedia.us/shows. Look for What's Going On with Earl Ingram, and you can download the episode entitled From Pain to Purpose, A Boy's Point of View, and listen to it anytime, anywhere. Again, that's civicmedia.us/shows. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:29. You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. As baseball starts to wind down, football is heating up, and both the Packers and the Brewers are doing fantastic, with the Brewers still in first place, the best team in baseball with the best record, and the Packers 2-0, with everyone hoping it just stays undefeated for the rest of the season. And that's why we talk to J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel every other Thursday. He breaks down the numbers to help us feel better. Even though they're winning, we always have that pain in our stomach that things could change, but don't worry. According to him, the Brewers are still doing great.
You know, it's a pretty comfortable situation. They've got, you know, there is a chance the Cubs still catch them, but it's really not likely. Their magic number is 6, which means any combination of wins or Cubs losses, they've got 10 games left on the season, will do the trick. So it's very likely the Cubs clinched the playoff spot yesterday, but they're probably going to have to play in that wild card round, and the Brewers are probably going to win the division and get one of that first round bye, that really important first round bye. You know, there's a little bit of work to be done. There's some injuries too. You know, Trevor Megill, Jose Quintana are kind of the big ones right now, top of mind. But they are, you know, they're in a comfortable place. It would be nice to wrap this up sooner rather than later, and then they can, you know, give guys rest, mess around a little bit, experiment, figure out what they want for their playoff roster. I don't know if they'll get, you know, how much time they'll get to do that, but they are definitely heading in a great place, and they're only 4 wins away from a franchise record for most victories in franchise history. So that's also pretty exciting.
I don't want to belabor the point, but it is true, and I'm going to put this on me. At the beginning of the season in March, I was shrugging and saying, yeah, if we get a 500 season, I'll be impressed. And my goodness, I think we are at 600 right now and have been the best record in MLB for how long? First team to 70, 80, and 90 wins. I mean, it's just been a season that I don't feel like anyone, whether you are in the business of talking about it or just a big fan, could have
foreseen this. Yeah.
No. Yeah, this is just, on paper, it still doesn't make sense. They still don't have a third baseman, although Caleb Durbin has been white hot. You still don't look at that team and say, oh, they got great guys at every position on the infield. You know, Joey Ortiz has struggled offensively all year long, as good as he has been defensively. First base has been okay. You know, Andrew Vaughn had that moment in the sun, but we're not talking about a position that has been one of the biggies over the course of the year. So there's places they could have gotten better, and their starting pitching is good, but I would go into the postseason looking at this team and be like, they don't maybe have that top three. They had that in 2021 when they had, you know, Burns, Woodruff, and Peralta at their best. This year they've got Brandon Woodruff, who's pitched amazing. He's been incredible, but he is, you know, like some of the tools that are available to him aren't anymore. He doesn't throw as hard. You know, his stuff isn't as good. He has to be more of a pitcher. And then Freddie Peralta has been good, but he usually doesn't work very deep into games. You know, you could find flaws with every one of the starters. And yet, despite, I guess, what you would call the shortcomings, they are, like you said, they've been the best team in baseball for quite some time. Now, I would also point out that typically the best team in baseball is a 100 win team, even by now. Like, they are running away with that honor. Mm-hmm. We haven't had that this year. It is there is a lot of parity, and so much so that the team that's going to get the 6th seed in the NL is going to barely be an above 500 team. So, you know, yes, they are the best. I would say the gap between them and the other playoff teams is probably going to be pretty small. The Cubs, Dodgers, Phillies, Padres, those are teams that are just as good as Milwaukee, and, you know, in some cases better if you're looking at different aspects of the roster. So it isn't like, you know, they have this crown and they're guaranteed anything, you know, like they could very easily lose and people wouldn't even be surprised by that. So they have to they have to find a way to play their best here at a point in the season, you know, this postseason part of the year that has eluded them the last few years when they've had home games and they weren't able to cash in on that both of the last two seasons. And, you know, even in 2021, they had home field advantage and weren't able to keep it against the Braves. So like it would still be, I think, a breakthrough to mm-hmm. finally get back to where they were in 2018. And that's the NLCS, let alone anything that comes beyond that.
Exactly.
Let's talk a little bit about the Packers. And I did want to, the one thing that jumped out at me was the Lions just crushed the Bears, didn't they? It was like 52-0, wasn't it?
Yeah. The Bears are real bad. Real bad.
That's a shame.
It's tough. You just hate to see it to Chicago sports teams.
No.
I just hate it.
I just feel bad for the fans. They always walk in on day one. They're like, here it is.
This is a year.
We have the insert new whatever it is here, whether it's coach, quarterback, running, but doesn't matter. They think that's the fix. And then within 40 minutes of the first game, they're like, oh, it's going to be the same as always.
Yeah, they win the offseason every year and never really in the season. But, the Lions, like, yes, they looked great, which even though the Bears are bad, it certainly lent greater credence to the success that the Packers had in week one against the Lions and completely shut them down and played so well defensively. I think that's just what, you know, the sky's the limit for this defense. I think it's just a question of how good are they? They've held two teams that came into the, you know, two of the higher scoring, greatest teams of the, you know, best teams in the NFC last year and held them completely in check. So maybe those teams are way down. Maybe not. Maybe this is just really a special, special defense. So I don't know how much more we'll learn against Cleveland because Cleveland is not great. They have a quarterback who's very old and will probably be under pressure a lot. So we'll see how that goes. They also have one of the best defensive players in football in Myles Garrett. So the offense, you know, they've got a challenge too, because they haven't crushed it. They've been okay. They've been good enough for sure, but they haven't crushed it. So I think there's some levels to unlock there. We'll see if the Browns are kind of the fixins they need to get that part of the game on track.
I would really like to see the Lions do well.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, my wife's a Lions fan. We hang a Lions flag at my house.
Yeah.
In deference to her, of course.
Well, that's...
Everyone thinks it's me. They see me walking around like, oh, I see your Lions flag. Like, hold on.
Wait.
You should just hang a small asterisk underneath it too, so people understand there's a
good
reason.
Point.
My yeah. wife.
Yeah. I need a second flagpole for the asterisk.
Yeah, you're absolutely exactly. right.
Our thanks to J.R. Radcliffe from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel for stopping by and breaking down the numbers as he always does every other Thursday. Don't forget, Civic Media has a brand new newsletter out there, so if you go to civicmedia.us, you can find out more information on how to sign up and get the best of the network sent to you every day for free in your inbox. Again, go to civicmedia.us. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you in 20 minutes. It's 7:59.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
You're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow on WAUK. My name is Greg Bach. I'm back, and here's what's going on in southeastern Wisconsin this morning. You know the music, I know the music. It's time for Civic Media's award-winning meteorologist Brittany Merlot to come give us the forecast for the weekend and tell us about, you know, some fun things happening over the fall, including, I guess, how sugar, or sugars, I'm not a scientist, how they affect the color of the leaves. Regardless, the warm temperatures are going away and the cool ones are heading on in because autumn is here, get those sweaters ready and the pumpkin spice a-flowing.
The weather has been incredible, at least here in southeastern Wisconsin. This cannot possibly last, can it?
Oh, no. No, it can't. I'm sorry. It's a second summer. You know, we get that every year.
It does. Yeah. Second summer. So how long does second summer hang around?
It's pretty much over. Maybe like tomorrow you might hit 80 or something, but...
And then it ends.
Yeah.
It's over. It's over. Yeah. We've got this pretty big system that's going to be moving in, and it's already draping a front through the state. And as that continues south, we're just going to see more and more shower and storm chances. It's going to be actually a really dark and damp, dreary weekend. Could be soaking in places, actually.
Okay. So not necessarily the weekend to go out and do all of my outside things.
No, no. Unfortunately, no.
Oh, I can't do yard work? Oh, man. I gotta watch Ted Lasso for a 15th time. Oh, man.
You do.
Is this good? This is going to be statewide, Brittany. The whole change is going to affect the entire state.
Yeah, pretty much will. I mean, the South, you're going to hang on to a little bit more mild temperatures versus the North. For example, Saturday up north, it's going to be in the low 60s. When down south, you'll be in the mid 70s on Saturday. But then it might flip on Sunday, where up north, you could maybe make it to the mid 70s. And then down south on Sunday, you could just be in the low 60s.
Oh.
So kind of a flip-flop, interesting system. It is just going to be swirling showers and storms throughout Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, maybe even lingering into Monday. And then another system wants to move through. That jet stream is seriously setting up right over Wisconsin. It looks pretty active with wet weather on and off, honestly, for the next 2 weeks or so. And then I was looking, too, later on, we do drop pretty chilly, where I am seeing some 50s in the forecast, and that's before the month ends.
Oh, wow. So that's going to obviously affect the changing of the trees, the coloring of the trees, right? The earlier the cooler weather comes along, doesn't that make an impact?
Yeah, the weather plays a huge part. The high wind and rain can knock the leaves off faster. We usually get that here in Wisconsin. That's usually what happens to us. But the sunshine and cooler nights is what really gives those vibrant colors. So with this week that we just had, the nights weren't as cool, but the sunshine was out. We're already seeing a couple of counties up north, Taylor, Forest, Florence, and even Brown County by Green Bay are at 30 to 50% color already.
Oh, that seems early.
Yes. I mean, their peak is supposed to be second, third week of October. So, yeah, they're already changing, and I can verify that in Marathon County, too. It's like, whew, it's about to be here. But when you get those cooler temperatures for later, I think it's definitely going to fill in. I mean, that is right at the end of September into early October, and everything is going to pop after that, and it actually looks to dry out, too. So some perfect weather conditions moving in right in time for October. And I think it's really cool. I'm such a nerd. I was looking into why do they change the colors that they do? Because, you know, maples and oaks have the red leaves and stuff. Did you know that there's these little like sugars that are in different things? So basically this anthocyanin is in a red leaf, but it's also in cranberries and blueberries. That's what gives it that color.
That brilliant red.
Yeah. So then I was like, okay, well, why the yellow? What's that? Well, it's the same thing that's in corn and papayas. Isn't that interesting? An orange is the same thing as that's in a carrot. So when you trap those sugars in the leaves, that's what shines through as the tree is starting to shut down for winter.
Hey, does anybody know why Brittany Merlot wins all the awards every year? It's
because I'm a geek.
And that geekdom pays off because you write great articles that talk about these. You talk about a whole, you don't just talk about the weather. You talk about things that keep us safe, how to keep our eyes out for things that are coming up in the weather. These wonderful little tidbits of joy that about why the leaves change color. It's apparently they need a low sugar diet. I wasn't really listening, but the point is, this is what I love when you come here and talk to us, because there's always these great little pieces of information.
Well, and I think too, Brittany, I think you are a good indicator of who makes a good journalist because you are curious and you find out one thing and it's like, well, why is this thing like that? I'm going to find out why that thing does that thing.
I like that.
Yep.
That's what a journalist does.
Yeah. And that's why you're an award-winning journalist.
Woohoo.
So as far as this rain coming in though, Brittany, and you had mentioned that we're kind of have this, this Gulf Stream sitting over Wisconsin for the next 2 weeks. We're not talking about dumping another 14 inches on one area in 24 hours, I hope.
No, I'm not seeing that in the forecast. What I am seeing, though, is potentially heavy rain Friday night and then maybe Sunday night where we could see an inch or two. So not 14 inches, but an inch or two still adds up.
It does.
And then with the consistent rain, too, on top of that, it's just going to be damp and dreary puddles, maybe low-lying flooding in certain areas that usually kind of get that after a lot of rain. But I don't think this is going to be a flash flooding, extreme downpour scenario at all.
All right. Brittany Merlot joins us every Thursday at this time for a little weather and wine, keeping us up all updated. Thank you so much, my dear. We will see you next Thursday. Have a great weekend.
Thanks. You too.
As always, we love having Brittany Merlot on the show every single Thursday at 10:20 to talk weather and wine and tell us what we can expect from the weekend's forecast. And if you want to read more from Brittany Merlot, go to civicmedia.us/news. There you'll find everything she put out there, including the ones that won awards, because she is an award-winning journalist and meteorologist. Again, that's civicmedia.us/news. Stick around, because after Mornings with Pat Kreitlow is Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and me, Greg Bach. And today, our guests are Civic Media political editor Dan Schaefer, as well as Congressman Mark Pocan. Stay tuned. You're listening to WAUK's local report on Mornings with Pat Kreitlow. For WAUK and Civic Media, my name is Greg Bach. I'll talk to you on Monday. Have a fantastic weekend. It's 8:29.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.